Welcome to Yak Baby Zoomy Podcast. I'm
good.
3, 2, 1.
The Yak Babies. Sex, presidents, and sometimes books.
Welcome to Yak Babies, the only podcast on the internet sponsored by Dwight D. Eisenhower. Come hike Ike. My name is Aaron. Here, my personal pals, Dave.
Hey, boys.
Yeah, Brick.
Hey, boys. What state do we think Dwight D. Eisenhower is being erected in?
Erected.
He was born in Texas, but I don't know what state he's associated with in terms of like his like presidential library. Like
where his library is.
But let's say Texas, because that's the only thing I know about the state where he's from.
I feel like it's Texas, yeah.
And of course, we have old Irish Nico calling from old Ireland.
Hello.
Hello, indeed. Well, this episode is all about Nico's reading suggestions. So this was tied to our genre reading episodes from a couple, I don't know when, last summer, I think. We talked about romance novels and cozies and sort of the genres that we don't spend a lot of time with. We talk often about mystery novels and fantasy and stuff like that, but don't really talk about sort of the other ones. And that led to a discussion of, well, we should talk about fantasy more because mostly just Nico talks about it. So he got us to all read a fantasy novel by Joe Abercrombie. Nico, tell us about this book and why you chose it for us to read.
So it kind of ties into a couple of other topics, one being audiobooks. I really like the audiobook narrator of this. I think he's one of the few that really adds a lot to a book. And I feel like without him, this book would be potentially a lot more boring. And then also, we were talking about what is memorable for us about books. And I was actually planning to reread this book because one of the main characters, Inquisitor Glockta, is extremely memorable to me. And if he's like in like a sea of fantasy books that I more or less forget most of the details of. And I forget, in fact, most of the details of this one. I really like the image of him is pretty crystallized in my memory. He's a one-time kind of hero, the winner of this sword fencing contest. And then he was captured by this enemy army, tortured, brutally tortured. And now he himself is a torturer. And he's kind of the investigator of this book. But he's halfway between kind of an investigator and what you would think of as a torturer, which is just somebody who kind of goes out and extracts confessions so that political kind of machinations can be played out through those confessions so that, you know, charges can be trumped up, organizations can be destroyed, all that kind of stuff. So anyway, that's why I was a bit disappointed with the reread, and really? I'm not going to be rereading the rest of the trilogy, but I am curious, and like looking back at this, kind of doing the research just for this episode, it is considered, luckily, like one of the kind of big trilogies and big authors of kind of modern post 2000 fantasy writing. I think this came out in 2006.
Yeah.
So that's good, I guess, that we can talk about that. He's the author Joe Abercrombie is kind of credited with the style that they call grimdark, which is kind of where there aren't many heroes. Everybody is kind of an asshole. It's not good guys versus bad guys. It's kind of everybody's just doing, everybody has good parts and bad parts to them, more or less. He spends a lot of time trying to kind of subvert tropes and do stuff like that. So anyway,
gotcha.
That's my intro. What did you guys think about this?
Yeah. Also, a good question kind of like before you get into that is like everyone's background on fantasy literature. I have very little. I read Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit in middle school, like I think most people do. Chronicles of Narnia, for sure, when I was a kid, liked those. And then like a couple here and there, but I really kind of fell out of that by the time I got to high school. And I was more interested in contemporary literature, basically, and then sort of lost that, or like, I guess like a literary fiction, I guess, sort of lost that sort of fantasy thing. And then going back to it now, I mostly just want to read like superhero stuff is my genre inclination there. And I guess like sci-fi too. Dave, what about you? What is your fantasy background?
Yeah, same as you. I, in high school, maybe I think I just read the first Narnia book and then Lord of the Rings, and that's it. I don't think I've read any fantasy as an adult.
And Brick?
I mean, as a kid, my favorite books by like a large margin were the Brian Jakes Redwall books, the fantasy.
Right, right.
Like I had all of the ones that existed in the years that I was reading them, and I read them all 3, 4, 5 times each. Like I just love those books. When it comes to like video games and movies, fantasy is probably the genre I like the most.
Mm.
But I just can't hang in with fantasy books, and I've tried a number of times, and they just really kind of bore me. I did really like The Lord of the Rings. I first read it in college, but I read The Hobbit as a kid, and I didn't like it. I thought it was boring.
Interesting.
And I also read the Narnia books as a kid, and I didn't like them because they were too different, I guess. I don't know how to. Mm. I didn't. And then when I tried to read them again as an adult, they were too Christian. So that was that. The only one I ever really liked was The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and that was because I liked the cartoon.
Oh, sure. Right, right.
So I like the idea of fantasy. I think, I don't know why I have such a hard time. Because I don't have that same struggle with sci-fi books, even though I don't read sci-fi books a lot.
Right.
When I do, I generally like enjoy the experience. It's very rare I get to the end of a fantasy book, and I've tried a number of times over the years.
Right. I think we kind of generally sort of have the same sort of track there. Like, we curious, but not just like dedicated readers for sure. Just kind of have a difficulty with the genre maybe overall. I like this a lot. I really enjoyed reading it, or listening to it, I suppose, is what you would say. We'll talk more about that in the audiobooks episode.
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised. It took me a while. It took me until about a third through when I felt like I knew what was going on and knew like what the setup was, right? So I think about 7 hours in, so it's a 22-hour audiobook, so it was an undertaking. At about seven.
What speed did you listen to it on?
Oh, just the normal speed. I don't know if I could do the one.
I like one speed. And a quarter.
I feel very nervous.
Anyway, we can talk about that during the audiobooks episode, but yeah.
That's the audiobook question, yeah. So about a third way through, I was like, okay, I know what's going on now. And for those first 7 hours, I was like, a lot of names, and I don't know.
Right.
I still don't know a lot of what happened in terms of what it meant or what was important about it. Like all the stuff with the merchants being murdered and that kind of plot, that conspiracy. I was like, I don't know. I can't follow this in the slightest. But once I got a sense of who the principal characters were and what their relationship was to each other, then I was like into it. I sort of really enjoyed going back into the world whenever I would sort of pick it up for a couple more hours of listening. But the main issue I think here is this is one of three, and so the end of it was like, come on, like the ending was such a, I wanted,
it became pretty apparent about two-thirds of the way through that it wasn't going to have an ending.
Yes, I feel the same way too.
And then so I had a similar, it took me a long time to get into it, especially, so there's like four-ish main threads, some more dominant than others obviously.
Yeah.
And two of them I didn't really have any interest in.
Which ones?
I liked Glockter, even though he took me a long time to get to him. But really, the part of the book that kept my attention the best was Baez and Nine Fingers.
Okay, that makes sense.
That was the kind of plot line, and I appreciated when they all come together in the end. But that was sort of the one that whenever I started to kind of flag interest, I would kind of get reeled back in because I liked Baez. I thought he was a good character, and then Nine Fingers was a pretty good subversion of a trope. Glockter, I ended up liking, but the first third of the book is very heavy on him, and it was boring. He was like describing his torture. His character in particular does a lot of a thing that like I find pretty peevish, which is when characters' like internal thoughts are sort of inserted in the middle of things as like quips, which is something
lots of sassy internal dialogue.
Yeah, there's a lot, especially from him. And after a while, once you're more kind of orientated with both the plot and that character in particular, one, it's not as jarring, and two, it helps a little, but at first it's like, all right, dude, shut up. So it took a while to kind of come around. And then, you know, also he was like kind of laboriously describing the tortures and stuff, and this is boring. But he became, you know, that ended up serving the purpose it was supposed to. By midway through the book, he was a pretty fascinating character, you know, as Nico described.
Yeah. I feel like Lacto was the main character for me. That's the story that I was most interested in and felt the most connected to. And partly it's the performance. And we should look up the guy's name.
Stephen Pacey, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Does a really great job, I thought. And the acting is, with the Glockton character especially, was like very
lisp.
Yeah, but it goes, he has, because he's missing four teeth because of his torture, but then his inner monologue doesn't lisp, and it's a really cool transition. Like the voice is close but not the exact same, so you hear that difference. And he just like plays him as kind of like a guy who you can tell is broken and like deeply traumatized and like kind of an asshole, but also like wants to mostly do the right thing but doesn't really know how to do that. I thought it was really good. So his story is, like I said, one of the main, I think the main one for the book for me. And there's the story of Nine Fingers, who's like a barbarian, and Baez, who's this magician, like the first, or like the oldest magician, or whatever, or wizard, who obviously has a lot of power and seems to he has a plot of some kind that we don't get, we're not privy to just yet.
Yeah.
And then there's like those kind of dealings.
I mean, he's pretty Gandalf.
Very Gandalf, yeah.
Right, for sure. Except
there's the dealings of the city.
Except he's definitely not Gandalf, because I don't, it's kind of hinted at by the end of the book, but he kind of starts off as Gandalf and then he kind of becomes somewhat like he has his own plot going on that he's intentionally like not telling anybody, because otherwise Logan and all these other people probably won't help him do it, right? Because he's not a good guy.
Yeah, you can tell he's not purely a good guy because the like the way they treat some of his like manipulations. That one scene when the
fucking explodes that guy.
Well, that too. Yeah. When he's like, also you never saw Gandalf full nude. Full frontal. His old prank. So then there's a story of like the doings of the city, which is that's what I was thinking of in my head, like the fencing tournament and the various like soldier characters like West and Jezal, whatever his name is, and that guy's sister and all kind of stuff, not all of which I was fully sort of registered, maybe. And then there's the plot of the like barbarian woman, or the slave woman, and the wizard who like helps her get to the city. And then there was the band of other like soldiers that used to be led by Nine Fingers, who were. Then we had a couple chapters.
Yeah. So the latter three of those that you just described all feel like they're just there to set up for the next book.
Yeah, definitely. For sure, the barbarians, like the soldier band in the woods, whatever, was definitely setting up for something that didn't really pay off in this book.
Right. The whole thing with Bethod is like it's not brought to completion at all. It's just kind of started.
Yeah. He's the evil. He's like the big bad here. He's like the Darth Vader, I think, of this, or the Emperor of this book in some way. I mean, he shows up in one chapter, I think.
Yeah. You see kind of his kids and his like messengers and stuff, but you almost never see him, which is obnoxious, I think.
When did Game of Thrones come out?
In the 90s, books? Starting in the 90s.
Okay, because that Bethod's guy also feels very Game of Thrones. Just like the invader from the north,
Yeah, this definitely had that feeling. Yeah,
except that's kind of more the Shanka are the ones that are kind of pushing, you know, these like kind of semi, or I guess fairly like magical, supernatural kind of creatures that are attacking from the north and kind of putting, they do kind of serve the same purpose as the White Walkers in Game of Thrones, which is just to kind of put pressure on the human politics.
Pressuring presence,
Yeah, Game of Thrones was 96.
So I have some breaking news.
Ooh.
The Dwight D. Eisenhower Presidential Library is in Kansas.
Okay, that makes sense.
Okay.
Which is a great place for a tower because you can see very far because it's fucking flat.
Perfect.
So there's another aspect of this book before, I don't know where we're going next, that sometimes really irked me and sometimes I found to be a useful tool because it saved a bunch of exposition, which is most of the, like, when they're talking about the world, they're like pretty clearly, even in name, analogs for real.
The one place is called Angland. I was so pissed about that.
Angland, I forgot the other names, but there's a place that was pretty, there was like Austria, but it was a little different. And then there was one that was clearly Italy. There was one that was clearly like Turkey or the mid, like
Gurkish.
Yeah. So they're. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes it felt kind of like dumb and maybe lazy, and other times it was like, well, I would rather this than have to go through, you know, a laborious 100 pages worth of exposition on the world politics of this.
Right.
So, but it opens up that question where, like, how much external knowledge of just the world that's real are we allowed to put into this? I don't know how I feel.
That's something I found interesting too. First of all, the England thing, for the first several chapters, I was like, oh, this is set in, I thought he was saying England.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, it's a weird pronunciation of England. And this is like set in like real history, because it kept mentioning the Inquisition. I was like, the Inquisition, was it in England? I don't think it was. Maybe it was. Maybe it was like, my history is bad. And I was like, I just gotta read up on this shit, figure out what's going on here. And then at some point, I think it was when the wizard came in, I was like, oh, this is not set in our times. And I looked up the Wikipedia and it said England, and I was like, motherfucker, that is so dumb. It made me so mad.
Yeah.
But other things too, like there were a couple phrases or little like throwaway references to like the famous poet once said, and they'd have a quote, and I was like, we don't know who that famous poet is in this fantasy world. It's not like one of our famous poets. There are a couple things like that where it's like playing the way you would play a scene or a moment like that in a novel set in our reality, relies on the reader catching the reference and knowing who Shakespeare or someone that is, whatever. Mm-hmm. Whereas in this book, it's like the shell or the performance of that without any of the content, because you don't know, there's no reference to catch up on. It's just fill in the reference with something that seems reference-y to you. I didn't mind it necessarily, but it was interesting. I was like, that's a weird choice. Like, it must be, as a fantasy writer, you must sort of want to at some point like rely on those kinds of moves that like a literary fiction writer could make at some point, but you really can't because there's no shared references. So you have to go on something else. Yeah, I thought it was interesting to do that. It did build up the world in a way that I thought was interesting. But yeah, like I like share with Brick, sometimes hard to follow. And also a lot of names and lots of like, oh, I guess that's probably going to be important, but I'm not totally sure.
Yeah.
Dave, you've been quiet. What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, I made it maybe a third of the way through. Not because of the content or because the story wasn't interesting, but because I kept falling asleep. So I slept through maybe half of this book, and I would wake up and I'd have to go back to the last thing I remembered, and it became really laborious.
Right.
And we'll talk about it more in the next. We'll do an episode about audiobooks, so I guess I won't waste too much time here. But, you know, I found it interesting. Glockter was the character for me, too, who jumped out. But, you know, I didn't make it very far, so who knows what may have happened.
Yeah.
So the idea of me going to pick up this book as an actual book and reading it, I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, it's a good question to explore, too. Like, Nico, you just said you're not gonna follow up and read the rest of them.
Yeah.
And you haven't before?
Oh, yeah. No, I did before. I read the whole trilogy. Oh. I am going to skip to his new trilogy, which takes place in the same
right,
and it takes place, it jumps forward like 30 years, and then the Ardy and Jazal have a bastard baby, and then so she's grown up in the future, and it's like follows her as the main character. This guy is a good writer, and I think just the kind of almost functional quality of his writing, like he, like when there's a scene in a big city, like it feels like a big city, and he manages to like make that kind of part work in a way that I find satisfying. And I think his characters are good, even if some of them are annoying as fuck. Like I think Jazal is really annoying.
Yeah, a really hard character to follow for long periods of time, because he's really annoying and bad.
It is interesting how sooner or later all of his bad characters have kind of moments of humanity, and his good characters are never good for that long.
Right.
Like the scene with Glockta, like pretty late in the book when he's talking to his old friend Colum West, and he's like, he gets like super pissed, and he's like, you know, yeah, why didn't you ever come to see me after I got back from being tortured? Like you were my only friend and you abandoned me. And Colum West is like, what? Try to come see you and your mother, like, but, and then in like an instant, Glockta just kind of melts and is like, oh, well, shit. Okay. And then is like ready to be friends again.
Yeah. Cause his like resentment and his sort of, I mean, I say self-pitying, but he obviously, I mean, he was tortured. I get why he feels bad about his life and circumstances.
Yeah.
Has been the thrust of so much of his plot, is like feeling like wanting revenge in the world and feeling shitty about it. And so all of a sudden this like twist makes his character even more interesting. Now he's like has to reckon with the fact that he wasn't fully abandoned, and what does that mean?
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the best part of his writing, is like, you know, it's this world where basically everybody goes through some kind of shit, some kind of trauma, and it's like how do they deal with it, what do they do about it? So I think that's the real strength for me of this writer. And the bad part is, I think his pacing is bad. Mm. Like the amount of time that he takes with scenes, it makes it so that he can be really intricate and make them a bit more complicated than would otherwise be the case. But it also makes it drag out. And then you're two thirds of the way through and you're like, fuck, is any of these things going to pay off in this book? And it turns out not really.
Yeah, that's my big complaint about this book, is that there was no, the climax was that conversation between West and Glockta, and the rest was mostly anticlimax, like the big fight with Nine Fingers and those assassins, where he like gets to be a barbarian. I was like, well, I knew he was a barbarian, so this isn't a big reveal to me. Like, it just revert form. And the last chapter with Glockta, I didn't even know what was going on.
Right.
Like he was going somewhere, and I was like,
It's just setting them up for the next part.
Right.
I mean, I would say like the trilogy is worth it. Like if you like the first book, it's basically one story broken into three parts, which is, I think there's kind of two different kinds of fantasy series. One is like a trilogy or less, which is usually just one story. And then the other one is like kind of books without any kind of end date. And then each one of those tends to have more of a finality, more of an ending, I guess, to them.
Right.
But it's tricky, I think, for authors of these big series to make the smaller plots of the individual books satisfying, but still manage to make the larger plot like kind of keep going. And that kind of double-threaded pacing is I think difficult for.
Yeah, I can see that. I think that with this book, if he had just ended with a reveal of Baez's plot to some extent, if we knew, so there's right. The big ending chapter where it's like, we're going on a journey, like getting the band together. He gets, you know, all the sort of important elements for his crew to go on this quest, whatever. And I was like, now you have to tell me what the quest is about. Like, give me something so I know where you're going. And right. that will be, it's not, maybe not enough. It's like a good climax for like, oh yeah, now I know where this all culminated. I have information and I would be intrigued to go into book two. Whereas now it's like, well, I have to go into book two to even find out what this whole thing is about in the first place. It was a bit too cryptic with that kind of stuff. I wanted a bit more meat.
Yeah. Definitely.
You know, I will say that I was into it enough where if you guys had all come on and said, wow, this book is awesome, I'm already reading book two and it's just as good, then I'd probably buy it and start reading it. But that's clearly not the case.
Yeah, I don't know. I could see myself reading book two, but I think if I do, it's going to be in print form, which is interesting because I think a lot of what I liked about this book was listening to the performance of the reader, Stephen Pace. Yeah, they did a really good job. And part of the pleasure of the reading experience was hearing the different characters and following along with that. I liked that. But as we'll talk about soon in a recent episode or a new episode coming up, whenever it is in the timeline, I have a hard time with audiobooks, and this one especially. It's just, I don't know, I want the thing in front of my eyes. I want the physical experience of it.
Yeah, and I think if you do start reading the second book, you kind of have to sign up for the third book too.
I'm sure, because it's gonna be the same thing. It's gonna be the same, like, well, here's more of the story, but not enough. And yeah,
he does have a few standalone novels, and I feel like this novel was especially slow because he's got I want to say 9 or 10 books in this world now. So it's, and it had to start from scratch. Like, so this one is I don't know, 50% just world building. I think the rest are less than that, because you have like that kind of, right. You start to build those references and you start to get, you don't have to retread the same world building ground every time. But
yeah, there's like 2 trilogies, 3 standalone books, and then like a bunch of short stories and short story anthologies. There's like a bunch of stuff in this world.
Yeah,
it does have that kind of like, you know, comic book feel. I kept thinking about comic books when I was reading this because I've been reading comics for so long, especially superhero comics, and I know like the ins and outs of those like fictional worlds. Like reading any standard DC or Marvel comic, I usually can find my way through it because I just know enough of the references to pick my way through it. Like I'm embedded in that world, whereas I don't feel that same embedding here, and so I feel more lost. But it's also because I just started reading it. It's not fair.
Yeah,
but
is it a case where nobody's going to read the second trilogy without having first read this?
I can't imagine. Yeah,
I doubt it. Yeah, so there are comic books. Oh, really? This. So maybe that's where you.
Yeah,
go,
totally.
Aaron.
I'll do that. Yeah. It's definitely a very visual text. Like I was, you know, all the details, not all the details, but a lot of details are sort of like the looks of things and costumes and structures and architecture and all kind of stuff. It was very sort of visually engaging in that regard. Mm-hmm. I think a comic would be a good fit for this.
I'm not sure how far it goes. It seems like it might not do the whole trilogy, right. Which is obnoxious.
That's the theme of this series. It's just no payoff. It's just edging the book.
Yeah. You get 2.5 books through the trilogy and it just, in the comic book, just stops.
Do not bust. Well, I guess I really enjoyed the experience of this. It was interesting and it was something I would never have done without prompt. So I'm glad that we did it. But yeah, I'm curious to follow up and see which of us took the bait in the future. I might, seems like Dave's probably not going to, Brick, I'm guessing not. Nico said he's not going to either.
No, I did start reading. So the next trilogy is called The Age of Madness. And I think that one's almost done. And the third book comes out, I think, this year. So I'll see how it goes. Pretty interesting so far. Yeah, I just couldn't do the pacing for me of this one. Like, to do it a second time, I couldn't handle it.
Yeah. The thing that Brick mentioned, that like realization 2/3 way through, and you're like, oh, this isn't going to have a payoff, was a real bummer for me. Then I had the rest of it to sort through. I remember also thinking at one point, if there was any more, there's one more chapter about fencing practice, I was going to put it down and not come back to it. I was like, if there's any more fencing practice, I will stop reading this book because I'm fucking tired. It was making me feel like I had to go to practice myself. I was like, I don't, want to go to fencing practice.
So that feeling of like none of this is going to pay off is, I feel like, why Brandon Sanderson is so popular. It's because all of his books pay off. And you know, that's the number one thing that he does. And so you know that even if you just read one of them, it's going to have a payoff that you'll like understand. It'll be clear. The motivations will be well laid out. The consequences will be clear. The stakes will be clear. And you'll feel like everything really wrapped up at the end of it.
Yeah, I can get with that.
Which is underrated, I think.
Well, listeners, what do you do with fantasy novels? Do you read them? Have you read this fantasy series by Joe Abercrombie? Tell us on Twitter at YakBabies and email us at YakBabiesPodcast@gmail.com with your thoughts, questions, and commentary. Also, go to Patreon.com/YakBabies for access to our secret bonus podcast for $1 a month. You can get a whole litany of stuff. There's Bro-to-Bro episodes and games and Emmy Machine quizzes and all sorts of fun drunken mayhem happening on Patreon. Like I said, for $1. And also our merch is happening. You can find our merch on Twitter somewhere. There's some good shirts and mugs and stuff out there if you want to bring the Yak Babies into your home. In fact, invite us to your home and we'll do a podcast. That'd be great. Until then, Yak Babies, yakking off.
The Yak Babies would like to thank all their loyal listeners and especially their patrons, both past and present, including Michael, Bonnie, Sebastian, David, Roger, Kathleen, Bailey, Andrew, and William Howard Taft.